I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Philippe Christodoulou, a cryptocurrency investor and crypto theft victim. You can find Philippe on LinkedIn. Welcome, Philippe. It's so great to have you with us today.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So, Philippe, to start out our conversation, I saw through some research that you own your own company, the Eco Laundry Company, which you have, from what I could tell, two locations in Manhattan. But how did you get interested in cryptocurrency?
Well, the business that we have in New York is a very small business, and we have been trying to build it up since 2012. In 2015, we opened a second location, which struggled a little bit in the beginning to get to profitability. It took a lot longer than the first location. And in the process of trying to keep that store going with funding and whatnot, I ended up having to sell my house. And with a little bit of money that was left over from the sale of that house after keeping the business going with most of it, I saw an opportunity to take a little bit of that money and invest it in a way that over the longer term would give us enough money back to be able to grow the business. It was like a four-year plan to be able to scale the business into what we wanted it to be. I'm not an American citizen. My partner has a green card, but because I'm on an investor visa, I wasn't able to get access to the debt system, and I wasn't able to raise money easily to grow the business. So I saw this as a way, like a workaround, to be able to take the business to the next level on our own terms. And I made a four-year plan to survive the bear market and get to the point where at this moment we would be able to do that.
Okay, very interesting. And thank you for sharing kind of the progression of that path. And so, Philippe, I mentioned earlier that you are a crypto theft victim. So would you share with us what happened to you this past February?
Yeah, so for the majority of those 4 years, I had Bitcoin stored on a Ledger device. And it was almost second nature using the Ledger and using the app through my device to be able to access and, you know, have overview over those funds. And sometime in January, I decided to upgrade in my mind to a Trezor device. I had friends that had spoken about it and they loved it. And I thought, I don't know why I thought that it would be a good idea to change devices, but in my mind, I thought that security is everything. And a lot of people I know are saying that Trezor is a better device and more secure. And well, that's what matters here. And so I moved the funds over. And the funds have been sitting on that device, on the Trezor, for maybe a couple of weeks. And I had just been so busy with, you know, the business and COVID and you know, trying to keep everything together, because we'd managed to stay open during most of COVID, that I didn't get around to checking on whether or not there was an app to go with the device. It was something that I was going to come back to later. And one night I was sitting there working on something online with a friend. And I opened up the App Store to have a look in and see whether or not there was a Trezor app. Now, I remember when I was deciding on which device to use 4 years ago, I remember that Trezor didn't have an app. But I thought, it's 4 years later. It's almost impossible that they wouldn't have an app at this point. I'll just have a look and check. And when I went into the App Store, I found the official Trezor app with the official Trezor logo. And I immediately just thought, okay, so they have an app. So I went through like a mental checklist in my mind, which I remember very vividly looking at seeing the app and then looking at the reviews and seeing that it had a fairly large number of five-star reviews. So the review section looked normal. And then when I opened the app, it asked for my seed phrase. And I think the assumption is that I'm some idiot boomer that has no idea about the fact that you don't enter your seed phrase anywhere, but it's not true at all. I'm the most security conscious person when it comes to crypto. All of the people that I've bought into crypto, I've, you know, hammered home with them the importance of security and never entering your seed phrase and all of the same things that, you know, everyone that's been in the space will tell you. But it's also not a hard and fast rule anymore, you know, because just a couple of days before that, I'd entered my seed phrase into MetaMask because I had to restore MetaMask. So it's not like you don't ever do it. There are circumstances under which you do it. So I remember thinking, this is really odd. It's really unusual that they would ask for this. And so that's when I did another step in the checklist in my mind, which was, this is Apple, right? There's no reason. The reviews are right. It's the official app. I guess this is the way they do things. It's really unusual and doesn't make me feel very comfortable, but it's Apple. Like, I've got no reason to suspect that this should be a problem. And I had my account open, so I was looking at the funds, but as soon as I entered in that seed phrase, within 2 seconds, everything was gone. It's disappeared completely, and the red line just crashed down to zero, which was a very difficult thing to see.
So you saw that happen in real time as soon as you entered that in?
Yeah. And so for a moment, I thought that there was perhaps a glitch. And it took a couple of seconds. I guess I was in shock. But all of a sudden, I thought, I just entered in my seed phrase into that app. And I thought, oh, God, please, please don't let this be what I think it is. And I went back to the app immediately, opened it. I went back to the ICE app store and looked at the reviews and opened them up. And that's when I saw somebody had posted a review saying, do not enter your details into this app. It's a scam. But that review was kind of like hidden down. And I thought, well, I can't even describe the feeling. I've never experienced anything like it. It's just the room started spinning and I saw white.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I'm so sorry that happened to you.
I didn't remember thinking at the time that's a house.
Right. Right. And in some parts of the country, a couple houses. I'm so sorry. And so the overall rating in the app store, though, for this, you know, alleged, now we know, fake Trezor app was overall 5 stars. So yeah, that bad review that stated it was a scam, it sounds like that was pretty buried. Like, it wasn't at the top of the reviews. Is that what you're sharing?
Yeah. I mean, so when I looked originally at the reviews, I stopped and I made a mental note of the reviews and I thought, this looks good. This is fine. Of course, I should have opened, in hindsight, I should have opened it and read through all the reviews, but I've never done that before.
Right.
For an app. It's not something that I would normally do. I do always look at the reviews to make sure that it's a legitimate app, but in this particular instance, they were fake reviews.
Right.
And then, it was designed to trick you in that split second into moving forward into the next step. And that's another question about how those reviews get there. But
right. And so from what I understand, from what I read, was that the app was added to the Apple App Store with the original purpose of cryptography, but then they changed their purpose to being a cryptocurrency wallet, which Apple supposedly doesn't allow. Is that correct?
Yes. It's the what's come out of all of this is Apple admitting that it was a bait and switch, which is a term that I'm not sure was bandied around much, at least not that I'd heard of. And what it means is that any developer can upload an app to the App Store, get it approved through the official channels, and then morph it into whatever they want. It can be a scam app to steal any type of information or funds. And Apple admitted that they have no idea when that happens. They rely on their users to advise them when things like that are happening. But obviously, in this case, by the time a user's advising them that this has happened, it's too late.
They've lost their life savings. Yeah.
And so I was one of a number of victims from that same app, but the same app was on the Google Play Store also and downloaded over 1,000 times. So I know of at least three people that I'm in touch with that have lost their life savings as well. And, you know, we're in the millions of dollars. So it's really a problem. And what we're really trying to understand right now is how it is that Apple has no oversight over what's happening with apps in the App Store, especially if they're becoming malicious. But impossible to have that conversation because to this day, Apple still have refused to respond to my original call. In fact, it's even worse. They went on to say that my original call included a claim, which it did not. And I was able to verify that it did not, and they backed off that claim. But the truth of the matter is Apple haven't been helpful at all.
Interesting. Yeah, I saw that there was someone from Apple who had made a couple of statements surrounding the App Store, but nothing really, I would say, concrete, I suppose, or helpful, which that's a good segue to my next question was, how are you, because you lost 17.1 Bitcoin, is that correct?
Yep.
And today I looked up what that's valued at today. I know it fluctuates, so it's been higher, but today's value is 837,000. I think at one point over the past couple of months, it would have been more close to a million. And so what are the next steps for you as far as, I mean, how do you recover that? Can you recover your stolen Bitcoin from these, you know, thieves?
So two of the top blockchain analytics firms in the world have been tracking the funds. That's okay. Chain Analysis and CoinFirm. And the first thing I did that day was submit all of the transaction addresses and details to IC3, which is the cyber crimes unit, as I'm sure you know, of the FBI. And so I know that the funds are being tracked. They know where the funds are. The funds were converted into Tether at some point. And, you know, I'm being updated in real time when anything's changing with those funds. If those funds are attempted to be cashed out anywhere at any point, whoever tries to cash them out will be arrested. But they could also sit there for the next 5 years. So it's from the law enforcement side, it's very difficult to know how and when the funds might be recovered, if they will be at all. But certainly they're the most tracked funds out there right now. So I purposefully made a lot of noise about it publicly and made sure that there was a lot of eyeballs on those funds. And from the other side, honestly, I think it's a discussion with Apple legally, because I think there's some responsibility there that needs to be addressed about the fact that Apple claims to be the most safest and trusted place to download apps, when in fact that's not a true claim at all. And any app in that app store could be stealing your identity or stealing your funds. It could be a Robinhood app, or it could be a Chase Bank app. And you by the time you realized it, it would be too late. And then I think that there's a bigger discussion there to be had, and I'm looking into that aggressively.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that, because I spoke with, his name's Greg Bennett. He's an angel investor in the Seattle area. And, he had, his Bitcoin stolen in 2019 by Graham Ivan Clark, who coincidentally hacked Twitter this past July. And he had his Bitcoin stolen through a SIM swapping scam, where someone went to AT&T in Boston. Mind you, he lives in Seattle. They went to AT&T in Boston and they pretended to be him to get, you know, his number moved over so they could have access to everything. And I know that he litigated whatever with AT&T to hold them accountable for allowing that to happen. So that's where my mind was going, was something within that vein. But with Apple, especially with how our phones have become our wallets, right? I mean, that's just the reality of where we are and where we're trending.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's truly unbelievable to me that you know, that there's this admission that any app could steal your life savings at any time and they would have no idea about it. I think that's a stunning admission. I'm not sure they even meant to make that admission. I imagine that was a monumental mistake, but it's an admission nonetheless. And it's really, really got a conversation going in the weeks that followed after the Washington Post article came out, because I think that's, you know, besides all of the noise and the horrible people making horrible comments, which was really hard to have to read, but really once the noise died down, the conversation was around the responsibility from Apple to have tighter control over their app store and, you know, not to be making the claims that they are, given that they're not true. So yes, there is a discussion to be had there, and I certainly have no intention of letting it go ever. So there's going to be a conversation about it, but it's just a question of doing it correctly and working, you know, with the right attorneys. And I've certainly been having dozens of conversations with attorneys over the last few weeks. And yeah, there's just a lot of interest to bring this issue to light.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I had also read that CoinFirm, who you mentioned, which is, for anyone unfamiliar, a Bitcoin analytics and compliance company, they claimed that 5 people reported thefts via that same iOS app, acting as a Trezor brand, and that the loss was, I think you mentioned, like in the millions for the collective. Yeah. So had some of those folks reached out to you after the Washington Post story broke? Did they try to make contact?
Yes. We are 3 at the moment.
Okay.
And we have a chat going, and we are discussing options and sharing resources, and we're in 3 different states. So there's, you know, we're certainly having different conversations with different attorneys in different places and gathering information and supporting each other. Really was a difficult moment for all 3 of us. And there's also been a little bit of friendship that's come out of it in terms of just supporting each other. And I think when something like this happens, you feel completely alone and you feel violated and you feel like this terrible thing has happened. But I think it's been helpful to be able to say, we're not going to let this go, and we're getting those funds back, and, you know, let's stick together and make this happen. And I think it's helped all 3 of us, really.
I'm glad to hear that. Certainly strength in numbers. You're definitely stronger together to make people pay attention. I could see how something like this could easily just kind of fall by the wayside. And I'm sure there are people out there, maybe people even listening, that have had something similar happen and they didn't know what to do. They were alone, like you said, and they didn't know where to go or what to do. And maybe they just have that loss. I don't know, but it's scary to think how easily that could happen if someone were not to speak up like you did.
Yeah, you know, and this is one of the most difficult things about it, was that I know a lot of people in the crypto space. I know a lot of people that are building. I know a lot of developers. I know a lot of people that are, you know, really heavily involved in the space. And the general consensus from all of them individually was, yeah, they're gone. The funds are gone. And it's like, no, they're not gone. And it was really hard to have people that have, they've got, you know, 5, 6, 7 years in the space, 8 years on me, telling me to just let it go, because that's not who I am at all. Like, absolutely, I'm not going to let it go. And even at this point, once the Washington Post article came out, I had a lot of people, very, very experienced people, come back to me and say, "Huh, look at that! Like, I never would have, you know, I've thought to do that, but actually, that was the right play." To verify all of the details and get, you know, the right journalist to tell that story in the right way and start there. And what's come from that has been a lot more information than I would have got previously. You know, the initial thing that I was told was let it go and move on. And it was hard because some of those people I really, really look up to and trust. But then my own instincts kicked in, and it was the very opposite feeling. It's like, I will fight to the end of my life for this. There's no way I'm going to let something that I worked for so hard just go. It's just not who I am. Those are my funds. I felt so violated. I had a nervous breakdown. It took 2 months to recover psychologically and emotionally from that. I'm still medicated. I'm angry about it. I'm not going to just simply say, oh, well, you know, good luck to them. I'm going to fight in every way with every resource I possibly can to take back what's mine. And that was a process for me, because in my mind, the people advising me were smarter and better and more knowledgeable. And what I've discovered through this process is actually by sticking to my own intuition and instincts and fighting, I'm learning. I mean, I'm getting access to more information than I would have got otherwise, and learning about what's possible and what's not possible.
Right. And thank you for trusting your intuition, because I think, especially based on what you just said, like, you're really setting an example for folks. Like, if cryptocurrency is to be perceived as legitimate, I would imagine we would want the same accountability should it be stolen, just like, you know, cash or investments, whatever. So it seems very counterintuitive for me to hear that these folks who have been in this space for so long would advise you to just let it go, that you lost close to $1 million, when I highly doubt that they would do that. You know, I highly doubt if it happened to them that they would, you know, seek that counsel.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And it got me thinking that there must be so many people out there that have been the victim of scams one way or the other. I'm sure that there's 100 different ways that it could happen. And they've just said nothing about it because they felt embarrassed, or they felt like there's nothing that could be done, or who are they going to talk to? But I think what you're saying is exactly right. If there's going to be legitimization of this space, and it's going to be mass adoption as everyone's working so hard to try to make happen, then when something like this happens, then you have to try to step up and talk openly about it. I mean, was it difficult for me to do it? Absolutely. Did I feel embarrassed? There's no way to describe how embarrassed. When that Washington Post article came out, thousands of people out there were talking about what an idiot I am. And it was really, really hard to hear, because a lot of them were people that I know and respect from crypto Twitter that I've been following. Half of the people that called me idiots were people that taught me everything I know. And it was heartbreaking. But at the same time, I had to step aside from my ego and step into that potentially shameful and embarrassing space to fight for what's mine. I had a choice. I can either like be egotistical about it, or I can fight and take what comes. And it was a really hard path to walk. It was a hard decision to make, but it was even harder to follow through on it, because people were really, really horrible. I was called the scammer. First of all, I mean, there were hundreds of people that were saying that I was making it up, despite the fact that the story had so clearly been verified to the point where it was not possible to have that opinion. But people didn't even read the article. Mm. People were just spewing their opinions out and saying that I was making it up for attention, and that that I was laundering money. No consideration for the fact that they were hard-earned savings, very hard-earned and hard-protected through a three-year bear market, which is the most brutal thing I've ever had to do. Like, people were just absolutely vile. And I had to make a conscious decision to step through all of that, to say, if this is going to become mainstream, then people cannot be getting ripped off and scammed for $1 million left and right every day of the week. Just can't happen. So if I can contribute to the community, which so happily and readily shunned me, then this is the way that I'm going to do it. And by the way, I reached out to so many people in the community to say, this just happened and I'm really freaking out and I don't know what to do. And not one single person responded to me, not one.
Wow.
And yeah. So this is my way of contributing to the community, is to say, I will take the shame and embarrassment and I'll step up and do what I can to try to change one little bit of the space, which is to make sure perhaps that Apple can start to take responsibility for crypto apps in the App Store that could potentially become malicious and rip people off.
Well, I'm so sorry that that happened to you and that you essentially also became a victim of cyberbullying as a result of, you know, crypto theft, and a victim of that. But you are certainly, in my opinion, you're certainly doing what is in everyone's best interest by stepping up. And thank you. I commend you on that.
Thank you for saying that. It's definitely been a process, and I'm not some rich guy that has access to, you know, like the kind of resources that are going to just make this a hobby. You know, like, this is something that's really, you know, I have to take seriously and I have to really think through. And thankfully, you know, the support that I have around me to work through this now is, it has really come together in a team of people that are willing to help me see this through. But definitely it's been challenging for sure. And you know what's the most interesting part of all is that I'm a Bitcoiner through and through, and have contributed to the space more than any of those people realize, and bought so much money and strong hands into the space and nurtured them and mentored them. And you know, at the end of the day, not one Bitcoiner was willing to help. And the only people that have been helpful to me have been Ethereum people, which is really ironic. What I've learned has been something very interesting that I wasn't expecting. But what I've come to realize is that, I don't know, just perhaps a little bit about the toxic culture around Bitcoin is detrimental even to itself.
Mm. Yeah, that's an interesting point. And one I think we'll probably explore further as a society, as things like this keep happening. Because if this happened to you, like we said, and you know it's happened to others, and it will continue to happen. I'm sure that there are apps probably right now on there that are fake and kind of just hanging in the ether for folks to you know, bite onto and enter in and then lose all their
savings. Well, they're about to be.
Yeah.
Any minute.
Right.
Yeah.
So you talked about next steps. You're working with the IC3, which we've spoken with them a bunch. They're fantastic. It can be confusing for anyone a victim of cybercrime, regardless of what it is. It can be very overwhelming and intimidating, and you're not quite sure where to go. But you're also, in some ways, helping raise awareness for those not just affected by crypto theft, but by all cybercrime, by raising awareness to these things. And the unfortunate reality is that we speak to people all the time who are victims of cybercrimes, and there is a ton of victim blaming. That's just, I think, part of the kind of dark side of the internet, where we're all very inhuman, right? I mean, we're able to say whatever, and they're, you know, we don't have to see the reaction on someone's face. So, but I'm glad you were able to kind of go high when they went low, to quote Michelle Obama.
It was lower than low. I mean, I think what really hurt the most was the ha ha ha's and the laughing my ass off and good, he deserves it. You know, I just, as a human being, I couldn't understand, I couldn't process, especially in the state of mind that I was in, how another human being could laugh at somebody's misfortune and so publicly display their ignorance, clearly showing that they know nothing about the actual article that they're responding to. But just to be so cruel, it's a behavior that I can't process. I really can't. I don't know what it means to be that cruel and ignorant. I can't process it. To this day, I still can't understand how somebody could think that's funny.
Right. Right. It's not that I couldn't explain it either, because I just we don't even understand. Right. So it's hard to explain something that you don't understand, but I'm very, very sorry that it impacted you. But I think it's very healthy that you're able to talk about it. And I know that you've definitely been through it and you've had a hard time, but the way that you're speaking about it sounds really, really good to me and healthy. So I think that's good for others to be able to speak out and speak about what's happened to them as well.
Yeah.
Well, Philippe, where are your locations in Manhattan? Because we're based in New York, so we have a lot of listeners. So should anyone want to support you, do you want to just tell us quickly about your company and where you're located?
Yeah, absolutely. The Eco Laundry Company has a location in Chelsea, 249 West 18th Street, and in Gramercy Park at 239 3rd Avenue. And we do wash and fold, organic wash and fold and dry cleaning services. And we do pick up and drop off to within 5 blocks around each of those locations. And yeah, we're open and we're surviving, and we would absolutely love any support that we can get, for sure.
Wonderful. And that's important because there are a lot of, I mean, I don't dry clean often, but there's a lot of gross chemicals in dry cleaning, right? Am I?
Yeah, absolutely. And so we tend to be the go-to cleaners in New York for people that have allergies and have sensitivities to chemicals. And that's our, you know, our core population, but we also do really good cleaning. So people come to us for all sorts of reasons. And support us. I mean, we have over 150 customers that come to our locations from Brooklyn.
Wow.
Which is super crazy. Like, we have people that send suitcases from, you know, 100 blocks away. We have customers from Queens. It's just, we have this kind of cult following for people that support us because they have allergies or because of the sensitivities, but then it's also because they understand what we're trying to do and they go out of their way to support us. I mean, we're going to, you know, we have customers asking us every single day when we're going to open a location in Brooklyn because it's a nightmare for them. But at the same time, it costs money to open a location in Brooklyn. And that's what this whole exercise was about, was being able to grow the business and cater to our customers that, you know, so clearly want to support us. But it's just, you know, we have to find another way now.
Right. And yeah, and during a pandemic. So you're definitely, you're trailblazing in many different ways. So I think you're doing a great job. So Philippe, just thank you so much for joining me and for sharing your story. So honestly, I think, like I said, probably a million times by now, but I think it's just really important how you've approached this. And I think that all of those people who criticized you are going to feel like fools. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think that each man faces his own truth on his own path. And at some point, they're going to have to reckon with that part of themselves. Yeah. And it's really, you know, it's at the end of the day, not my problem, but definitely it was painful. And, you know, to see that ugly side of humanity was definitely an eye-opening for me, because I'm not hardwired that way. But no, I'm grateful for the opportunity to tell the story, and I'm thankful to you.
Thank you so much. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Philippe Christodoulou, a cryptocurrency investor and crypto theft victim. You can find Philippe on LinkedIn, and you can learn more about his company, The Eco Laundry, at ecolaundrycompany.com. And you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.